Hello and welcome back. Whether you are a first-time member stopping by, want to join, or whether you're a long-time member of the congregation, it's great to have you here. It's great to be here. It is Parish of the Patriots. I am your humble host, Grandpa Dan. And it's great. It's the 102nd edition of the show in 102 in numerology. Do you know what that means? It just means it's the 102nd installment of the show. It means we're chugging along. And we chug along by... thanks in part to the financial support you, the listeners, voluntarily do. It is very much appreciated. You are an elite group. Deacons. Oh, there, I just made you all deacons. not sure what that means. Not sure what it's worth, but there it is. There's the information. Don't know what you can do with it, but there it is. If you want to be a part of financially supporting the show, you can find that information at the bottom of the page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. And I'm going to go ahead and try to add a Monero down there. I've had a few people say they would prefer to use a Monero. So I'm going to go ahead and throw that down there as well. If you have some other janky weirdo cryptocurrency, I don't know if I can get you an address for it, but I'll do the best. I'll do the best I can. And like I say, we take what we can get here. As a part of it, we do like to recognize our listener supporters. I got a listener supporter mailbag. I always enjoy going through, and we're going to get right to that. Because as always, we've got a lot of ground to cover, and we're supposed to, believe it or not, this show is supposed to be an hour long. Sometimes it is. Most of the time, it isn't. I just can't help it. I monologue for... I monologue, and I'm looking at my tablet. Sometimes I'll jot a few notes down just as starting points. I got nothing today. That's right. Just imagine anybody else. You turn on your TV, you have these people that are paid millions of dollars a year, and they basically sit there and write material that college interns do for them, and it's supposed to be funny or informative or whatever the hell. And they get paid all of this money. I can sit here monologue for over an hour just off the top of my head. As they say, it's not bragging if you can do it. We got to get right into the listener supporter mailbag. Week in, week out, Mr. T coming through Force GPD. I consider Tuesday my church day and you my pastor. Hope this small tithe helped. Believe me, it really does. And it really is appreciated. Like I say, those of you who do financially support the show are a elite group, and it really does mean a lot. It's just in the morale factor, So I also want to mention Charlie. Apparently, I apparently missed mentioning Charlie here a while back, so I want to correct any error there. It is very much appreciated. And finally, this from Debbie. Dear Grandpa Dan, hope this finds you well. I hear Texas may try to secede. I pray that it will happen. Hopefully some states can go with you. My biggest problem is there's a liberal state between my state and Texas. I've not been on Gab for a while. My husband went on and pulled you up and said that he has nothing. Then I listened to the show and hear you deleted. I don't do much with social media. They will be shutting everything down. I love this quote. It is error alone which needs the support of government. Truth can stand by itself, from Thomas Jefferson. Lies need support of the government and big tech. Truth can stand on its own. But it's also hard to get the truth out there. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. So they will shut that down. Jesus said they hated me without cause, and they will hate you. May God bless you. My prayers are with you, Debbie. And that is very much appreciated. Texit. Yes, I very much am a promoter of Texit. there's been a strong sense among the people for decades, actually, that Texas should secede. And of course, as the clown show continues on, the difference is now it's starting to be discussed more seriously in wider circles, and from even more, I guess you would say, mainline figures, more prominent figures are beginning to openly discuss it. And I think that discussion will only expand. I do believe the ultimate answer to all of this is secession. It's time to reset and start again. We hear about, the great reset that the globalists have, in mind. And I guess in the notion that a reset is needed in that narrow sense, they're not incorrect. I mean, this thing is coming apart. It's obvious it's coming apart. Anybody wants to see it. I think it's utter foolishness when people say America's best days are before it. America is on life support. Actually, it's brain dead in a vegetative state. Everybody's just gathered around, arguing over who should pull the plug. I mean, that's reality. I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm not trying, people, this is the parish of the patriots. And people say, what kind of patriotism is that? It's reality. It's reality. We're going to get into reality a lot on this show today. So, you know, just look forward to it. But no, I do believe ultimately secession will happen. I'm just going to be bold here and say it will happen. I think the only question is how ugly things get between now and then. I mean, if we're ultimately going to wind up there, it's like I've said this so many times, and I just come back to it because it's such a good illustration. You know, it's like a couple you might know that just basically all they do is fight, and you know it's going to end in divorce, and you wonder, you know, as an outside person looking in, you wonder, why don't they just sit down and say, look, we don't like each other, we hate each other. The only time we talk is when we're arguing and fighting, you know, we're throwing dishes at one another, calling the cops on one another. You know, let's just walk away from this. But they just can't. They just can't seem to let it go. It's like a competition to see who's going to win. And ultimately, it does end in divorce, but there usually winds up being like restraining orders and all this ugliness in between. And it just seems like, wow, couldn't they just have sat down and said, yeah, this isn't working out for either of us. Let's work something out and go our separate ways. And yet it doesn't seem to work that way. Logically, it should. But for some reason, it doesn't. Now, you would think emotion, I mean, in a marriage, you can understand there's emotion and resentment because however much time has been invested in the marriage. But you wouldn't think that would be the case for a nation. You would think people wouldn't be, you know, would be less emotional about it and could just think it through and say, well, logically, you know, this isn't something we can reach across the aisle and come to an understanding and a compromise on. You know, we got people that want communism 2.0 and the rest of us that don't want that. And there's really not any way to compromise with that. You know, those who promote communism 2.0, it's a blatantly anti-white agenda. White people are the big boogeyman, the demon, the people that have to be demonized continuously. And, you know, honestly, they're just open about their threats towards white people. How do you compromise with somebody? How do you compromise with that? That, you know, it's an anti-agenda. You know, it's not a pro-agenda. It's an anti-agenda. And it requires white people being the evil thing that must be overthrown and destroyed. Well, how do you compromise with that? Well, you can't. Ultimately, I do think it has to end in secession. I don't, like I say, I don't see any other way. Unfortunately, human nature says that instead of doing the logical thing and saying, hey, why don't we just go our separate ways here, it'll probably get really ugly between now and then. And yes, I mean, to the rest of it, absolutely right. The truth stands on its own. You know, we don't, it just amazes me the work they have to put into to prop up the lying narrative. I mean, they do. They have to work continuously. It has to be government enforced. You have to have the media constantly on about it. And, you know, the truth just stands there. It just stands on its own. And yeah, as a Christian believer, you're right. They hated Jesus. They persecuted Jesus. And what, we're shocked because they hate us too. So yeah, you know, it's just how it is. But we also have to remember that Jesus wins. And, you know, Jesus won, you know, the crucifixion, you know, the victory was Christ. And we have to strive towards victory ourselves. We have to have a winner mentality. It can be hard sometimes. You know, it is correct that they hated Christ. They persecuted the early church. They persecuted Christ. But we can't have this. We can't let that morph into, get distorted into like a loser mentality. Like, well, because, you know, it's just our role to be shit on by everybody as Christian believers. We can't, you know, we have to accept that, you know, of course, we're in opposition to the world. That's the way it works. But at the same time, we can't adopt a loser mentality to where we just expect to lose all the time, because that's not the way of Christ either. Christ went to the cross in victory, went voluntarily. He could have just wiped everybody's ass out. And honestly, everybody ought to be thankful every day that I wasn't Jesus, because I would have just been like, I'm nuking this whole thing, you know, piss on it, y'all, because I'm not Christ. But he went in victory, and we have to have that same victorious mindset. We cannot let that slip into, and it happens to too many people. They slip into this defeatist loser mindset. Like, well, it's just, they get comfortable. You know, they say in like football, yeah, I hate to use a sports analogy, but winning coaches will say that losing becomes a habit. You know, when a team gets on a losing streak, that just becomes a habit. They go out there on the field every week and they expect to lose. And not shockingly, they do. Even on games they could have possibly won. You don't have to be a sports ball fan to understand the relevance here. And you get this mentality, you let yourself slip into a loser mentality as a Christian believer that it's your just role to lose because the world's going to shit all over you. That's what's going to happen. You go out every week onto the football field, as it were, and you're going to lose because you expect to lose. You're used to it. You're comfortable with it. Yes, the world is going to hate us. Yes, the world will do what it can to silence the truth, but we can't adopt like a resign to that sort of attitude. We have to continue to strive for truth, and we have to continue to try to strive to win, because we are on a winning team. Believe it or not, we're on a winning team, but that takes effort. It takes work. It means we have to be, I tend to repeat these same points sometimes because they're true. You know, the point is that when Christ returns, you got to be doing something. You don't want to be one of these people sitting around on your hands going, waiting for Jesus to come fix it for you. I mean, you're supposed to be in the fight. You're supposed to be in the struggle. You're supposed to be doing what you can do. So anyway, yeah, it launched off there from the listener supporter mailbag. Much appreciated again. Much appreciate y'all's support. So yeah, here we are. I guess we've had the Biden inauguration now. We're past that. So I guess we'll talk about that a little bit. Why not? We'll talk about some other things, just general observations. I get tired of talking about the same sort of stuff. So what does all of it mean? What do we think about it? Well, there's a lot of things to take away from it. I think it's humorous. They had Biden up on the TV the other day signing all of these executive orders. He's got a whole stack of them, and he's taking them and signing them. And I'm just sitting there thinking, he has no idea what he's signing. That poor old guy, that old man has no idea what he's even signing. They just told him, sit down and sign all of these. He's like, oh, okay. Be presidential while you do it. All right. But, you know, basically, he's got all of these folks he's put in his administration. They're going to be the ones running, and they'll just trot him out once in a while and say, Biden has announced, but he's not. I mean, he doesn't really know where he is. Oh, yeah. What are the results of all of this long term? Well, maybe I think we can go ahead and officially say goodbye to the Q phenomenon. At last, we can put that to rest. The storm, here, not too upset about it, honestly. The storm skirted south. We never saw the storm in Texas. That happens. We got a big thunderstorm coming, and you're watching it on the radar. It just goes south and fizzles out, So it's not the storm didn't happen. I've seen, and I'm not trying to mock people that found some hope in that. I'm really not. I found it. I saw the other day one of these prominent commies was really making a big deal out of mocking the people that put some kind of hope in the Q thing. And I found that utterly disgusting, because it's yet another form of how they mock regular working people just trying to find some hope in this world, trying to hope that somehow this thing isn't as bad as what it obviously is. I don't. People have to have, and it didn't hurt anything, I guess, is what I wanted to say. I was struggling there for a minute. My monologue almost got interrupted. It doesn't hurt anything. There were people who say, Q is a big psyop to keep the people complacent so they don't do anything. But what the hell were they going to do? I mean, really, that's a legit question. I mean, what were the people going to go out and do? Form up some army or something? And I mean, come on, let's keep it real here. I mean, it didn't keep the people from doing anything. As we look at the long term, this, what it means, now we're pretty much moving on here. What does it mean? Oh, and before that, before I move on from that, a true Q believer say, yeah, you're going to look like a fool when Trump's military comes in and arrests all of these people. And I would just say, I will gladly accept being wrong. Yeah, I mean, really, it wouldn't be the first time. People get this idea that if I'm wrong about something, I sit in mourning, ashes and sackcloth for 7 days or something. Yeah, I've been wrong before. It'd be great. I'll sit here and come on the show. Hey, I was wrong. Look here, the storm showed up after I was just a little delayed. I'll just keep on trucking. I won't be devastated by it. It'll probably be a pleasant surprise, but I don't deal in empty things. I try to deal in reality, and that's kind of what you know, needs to happen now. You know, I mean, like I say, it didn't hurt anything. People haven't, and the chances weren't zero. Look, you don't have to, these people are going to mock you. They're going to try to make you feel stupid. But, you know, the chances that something was going to happen, that, you know, Trump was talking hella shit, you know, the chances weren't zero, and it didn't hurt anything. You know, I've had the long held position that, voting, you know, my oldest position, I guess, you know, going back, was that voting added legitimacy to the system, so don't bother voting. But I did vote for Trump. I encouraged y'all to go ahead and vote for Trump. Why? Because it couldn't hurt. I mean, the chances he was going to do something weren't zero. And I thought, you know, it didn't hurt anything to go ahead and put that last effort in, you know, to just see if this can work. Maybe somehow within the voting system, something, you know, something can happen. Maybe it can affect some sort of change. At the end, it didn't, but, you know, we didn't lose anything for it. And this gets into, I think, and as we'll get into it here in just a few minutes, the risk of the play that the oligarchy has made with this blatant fraud thing, putting Biden into office. You know, as far as Trump himself, you know, I don't know. There's people that are going to be horribly let down. I don't know why. In the end, all that's proven is that Trump was a boomer civnat. And I mean, that's all he ever was. And, you know, that appears to be the end game. You know, I always hated when I would see people use terms like the God Emperor. Yeah, I'm just like, you know, that meme was wore out a long time ago. You know, I mean, you can't get high on your own product. And people started expecting more out of Trump than he was ever going to actually deliver. But as a symbol, he's more valuable as a symbol for the people, to something to try to rally around, and a sense of some sort of like a 101 introduction to, you know, nationalism. And by winning in 2016, you know, it reminded people, you know, nationalism on some sort, you know, nationalism on some front or whatever, it does have the support of the people. Because the media is constantly gaslighting you, telling you everybody thinks like they do. Everybody is a SJW commie lefty. And that's not the reality. They're just amplified by the same media, Hollywood, the government, and so on. So it did enlighten everybody that, you know, nationalism is much more popular than they're gaslighting you and telling you. Of course, now they're going full on with the see, you know, we won in the end, but the question remains, have they? As I said, I just simply go back to voting, and I think that's the absolute best thing anybody can do. If people within the masses refuse to participate, it strips legitimacy from the system, and that's more powerful than you think. And this is one of the dangers. This is why this risky play with the blatant out-and-out fraud. You know, oh, we won. We got Biden in there. Okay, well, that's a short-term game at what cost? You know, the people that came before, this system has been corrupt for generations, to be quite honest. But the people that came before understood they were smarter than the ones running it now. And they understood that, you know, you need to push that so far. I mean, this isn't like the first time voter fraud has happened. You know, so, I mean, let's be real here. But the people before were smart enough to understood that, you know, there were limits to that, and you didn't want to get too blatant with it, because it was, you know, very imperative to keep the people buying into the system and believing in it and coming back to it and staying hooked into it, staying plugged in to the system. Well, you know, the people running things now have thrown that out the window. They threw it all out the window to get Joe Biden in there. To get the figurehead, Joe Biden, in there. And one has to wonder at what cost. When the people refuse to buy into the system, then they start looking for ways to just thwart the system, you know, that they can get away with in their daily lives. Little things that aren't going to get them in trouble. You know, just little things, nothing revolutionary. But when you have tens of millions of people doing little things to not comply with the system, it becomes like the death of 1,000 paper cuts. And it snowballs. More and more people get it in their minds. This isn't a legit system. But make no mistake, Democrat voters, even people that are sitting around being snarky and smug about how ha we won, they know this ain't legit. Deep down inside, they know that Joe Biden was not the most popular person in the world. They may be snarky and smug and mockers because they think they're clever because they're quote unquote getting away with it. But deep down inside, they themselves know it isn't legit. Who stays bought into an illegitimate system? the long-term effects of this can be much more far-reaching than anybody realizes. When people refuse to vote, that, you know, they can't claim to have a mandate. You know, were they just going to manufacture the votes and say everybody vote? I mean, it would just add absurdity on top of absurdity. But it goes beyond this. There are endless wars that they want to fight. Who fights these endless wars? It sure isn't the snarky class. It isn't the wealthy. It's not the children of the political class. It's those that they mock and hate. Children of the working man, who most of the time just join the military because the economy's been strip mined for the billionaires, so they have no job opportunities, so they just join the military. You know, it's better than nothing. But once it becomes this illegitimate and people don't want to do anything to support the system, you're flag waving and claiming you're going to fight for freedom, it doesn't play any longer. They hold open contempt. Well, if the children of those whom they hold so much contempt and disregard for refuse to voluntarily sign up any longer for their endless wars, who's going to go? They can't reinstitute the draft. I guess technically they could, but that adds another problem on top of another problem. There's a reason they got rid of the draft, you know, because they couldn't get any support for their Vietnam War because, well, everybody noticed that only the poor people were being drafted. You know, all the rich and wealthy and powerful, they were always able to get outs, you know, deferments, and you don't have to go because you're special. Only the working class people have to go and get blown up and shot. So they would have to do that again because the working class, I'm sorry, because the upper classes aren't going to volunteer to send their kids to some country on the other side of the world that you can't find on a map to die for our freedoms that don't seem to exist any longer. They require the voluntary service of those that they hold open contempt for. But yet, if they don't sign up, all the flag waving and saying you're a hero and a patriot and going to, you know, fight for our freedoms from, you know, people in the desert somewhere that for some reason shouldn't have anything to do with us, but for some reason they're the greatest threat to our freedoms ever. If people don't sign up for that any longer, who's going to go fight their endless wars? I mean, I think that there are going to be a lot of long-term fallouts. Remember when the Pharisees managed to successfully get Jesus executed, they thought that's the end of that. They got Jesus executed. The disciples went into hiding and they were all sitting around, no doubt, smug, rubbing their hands and saying, you know, ha, that's the end of that. Well, that's a flash in the pan. We got that solved. Now things can get back to business as usual. But that isn't the way it turned out, is it? It looked like defeat for the other side. They were just sure they had it tamped down and finished this time. But it didn't turn out that way. Speaking of these wars, because like I said, we're going to talk about a lot of different things. I don't want to just stay on the political stuff. But speaking of the endless wars and these sorts of things and how they frame things, you know, they frame these narratives. I think about how, like, you know, with the jihadis, you know, and they'll do like one of these suicide bombings, you know, and they got some poor sap and they put one of these suicide vests on him. And, you know, they have him go out there and they have him blow himself up, you know, and they tell him he's going to get, I don't know, however many virgins or whatever, you know, and we'll sit there and, you know, we'll be like, you know, well, if that's the case, how come the leaders never go strap on the vest? How come the leaders never go out there and strap on the vest? And we'll make fun of them for that, you know, and because it's a legitimate point. How come the leaders, you know, you would think these guys would stop and think, well, if this is true and it's totally, I'm going to get all of this great stuff and I'm going to be in paradise this evening. And it's going to be awesome. I'm going to be just smothered in virgins and it's going to be great. How, you know, how come these poor saps never think, well, geez, I don't know. How come, you know, Commander Ahmed, how come you haven't volunteered to put the vest on yet? You know, you're just denying yourself the great honor of being a martyr. And we make fun of that, but it's all about framing. Because how is it really any different from what this country does? They say, go out here and send your children, send your sons off to go on the other side of the planet, fight in a war that should have, you know, fight a bunch of people that should have nothing to do with us. They may even be killed. It's okay. You got to be willing to make that sacrifice for what? for our freedoms. You see, it's totally worth it to go on the other side of the planet, pick a fight with a country that should have nothing to do with us, because you see, you're actually defending the freedoms and the democracy. You're a hero. They will fold the flag and people will salute you and they'll fire off some guns and say it was totally worth your children being killed because they fought for a greater cause. They fought for the nation. They fought for the freedom. They were a hero. But yet those who are giving the orders to go fight these wars for this greater cause, they never go. The officers who hand down these orders and come up with the plans. One of the funny things is to say, this general is a combat veteran from Afghanistan. No, he's not. He was sitting back at the secure base issuing orders. That some bitch wasn't with a rifle strapped on out there going from house to house. You can bet on that. You know, maybe some lieutenants and captains are doing that shit, but generals sure as shit ain't doing that. They're politicians. So how is it any different? Those who say this is a great cause and it's totally worth your son or daughter being martyred for our freedoms. It's totally worth it. They died for our country and for your freedoms and you can be proud. How come if it's such a great thing, how come your ass don't ever go? How come you don't ever send your kids to go? How come your kids are going to almost went way off the rails? In the profanity department. How come your kid's going to freaking Yale and not out there fighting for our freedoms? Because it's totally worth it, right? Before you mock the jihadi who believes he's going to get 72 virgins, before you mock the believer who sends their son to go blow themselves up in a suicide vest because it's totally worth this idea that they're going to paradise, before you do that, take a hard look at your own country. You're fighting for the free. Your kid's not fighting for the freedom. They're not fighting for the great cause. They're smoking dope at Yale and getting laid. Spending daddy's money. That's the reality. How come your kids aren't going if it's so totally worth it? Before you mock the jihadis, take a good hard look. It's the same freaking game. It's the same freaking game. Go fight in this great cause for our freedom. My kids, it's a great cause. My kids can't go. They just can't. You know, Trevor's got to go to Yale. He's getting a law degree. He'll serve his country much better getting his law degree and eventually following daddy's footsteps as a politician. You see, it's even a greater sacrifice than your kid getting his legs. I'm really having to strain the profanity today because this really pisses me off the more I go on about it. You say, my son having to go to Yale and follow in daddy's tough footsteps, becoming a congressman and then a senator. Who knows? He could even run for president or he can order some more of you poor plebes kids to go get their freaking legs blown off. It's actually a greater sacrifice than your kid getting his brain scrambled up and now he can't sleep at night and wanders around the room thinking that, you know, there's attackers following him around or something. You see, it's a greater sacrifice. Honestly, I think the jihadi commanders are probably being more honest because at least on some, it's backed up by their religious beliefs. Obviously, I don't agree with those religious beliefs, but at least there is that common thing. It's probably more honest than what this crap that your political class feeds you. Go fight in this war. Why? Because of your freedoms. It's totally worth it. You're a hero. Here, I sent my kid to go die in a war and all I got was this crummy flag. Woo, people triggered. Spares of the patriots, you're not supposed to say things like that. It's reality. We deal in truth here. We don't deal in comforting lies. We deal in truth. Take a good hard look at it. Charge that machine gun, Nash soldier. Why, it's suicide. I'm not doing that shit. I guess some of us, why? Because you're too inept to come up with a winning strategy, so you just want me to just go run up there and get mowed down. I'll have some other guys go after you. We'll just keep sending them up there to get mowed down. Sure, why not? I can't come up with anything else. Go die. You first. But this is the way it works. This is the way it works. They sit safely back somewhere else and they send your kids to go die. Now, are you willing to do that for a completely illegitimate system where if you try to vote, they throw the observers out and put boards up on the window and the media tells you there's no evidence of fraud? Are you willing to do that now? Are you willing to do that for empty platitudes about being a hero and a folded flag at the end of the day? A lot of people aren't. long-term consequences from this sort of thing. Things they haven't bothered to think about. Long-term consequences. These people aren't nearly as smart as they want you to think they are. I saw an interview here a while back for this guy. I don't remember his name. Apologies. Probably be grateful. His name didn't get mentioned on my show anyway. But he was like one of the guys backing Parler when it got taken down. And in this interview, he basically said, pointed out here at all of those shutting these platforms down, you know, he said, you're the ones radicalizing people, not us, not people giving people an out. And he's absolutely right. I mean, we've just gone into full shut it down mode now, where some of us have been in that mode for a while, so it's not a big shock to us. But they're going in full shut it down mode now. Everybody's being banned from everything. And they act as though these people just are disappearing now. See, we don't have to hear them. We don't have to hear their uncomfortable truths. We don't have to hear their opinions we don't like. They're working people. They're not smart and clever and snarky like we are. They're not going away, but they're just going to shut them up. They're just going to tighten the lid a little more. And they think, what? I mean, they're going away. They're going to suddenly just change their mind. They're making absolutely, they're doing all this shit talking about Biden's going to bring the country. It's time to heal. And all of their healing is still more anti-white rhetoric, more snark and looking down on the working class people. It's more of the same. It's kind of like how they always like to say we need to have a conversation in this country about race. And, you know, a long time ago, people figured out that it's like, okay, great, cool. We'll do that. Shall I open up with FBI's black crime statistics and we'll go from there? No. Their idea of a conversation of race is always you sit down, shut the hell up while we lecture and virtue signal at you. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You're going to heal and bring the country together. Really? How are you going to do that? Y'all shut up, sit down, and we'll virtue signal at you. You know, maybe if you decide to do like those people that we were seeing last summer that were going around on their knees, getting on their knees and bowing down before Black Lives Matter and saying how sorry they were for something that they didn't actually do. I don't know how freaking retarded that is, but you know, maybe if you do, that's their idea of healing, of bringing the country together, apparently, by their words, by their rhetoric. Now they're leaping forward even further with all of this talk about domestic terrorism laws. We're going to get a Patriot Act. We're going to get a Patriot Act 2.0. I pointed this out on last Friday's installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sir Longshanks. That what I expect within probably the next year, because they've been working on this Domestic Terrorist Patriot Act version for a while. They got to sell it. So what I expect we'll get over, you know, within the next year is you'll get something they'll blame on a right-wing extremist. And then probably shortly after that, they'll take an Antifa pawn and throw them in there and have, you know, round them up for some sort of terrorism thing. And then they will sell it that way. They'll say, see, we've got all of the, we need a Patriot Act Domestic Terrorism Law 2.0. to crack down this domestic terrorism for everybody. We got both left and mostly right wing extremism that we've got to crack down on. Of course, we all know who's going to get cracked down on. I mean, they may throw a few Antifa pawns, you know, under the bus. That's to be expected. But for the most part, it will be people on the right wing that are going to be, this is going to be cracked down. But they got to sell that. They got to sell that as some sort of legitimate answer here for some reason. I don't know. Maybe they don't anymore. But I expect we'll get this sort of scenario set up because they'll be counting on, you know, out here in normal land, people will go, well, good, look at this. We can get this domestic terrorism law. They're finally going to crack down on these Antifas and this Black Lives Matter. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. They'll finally get, you know, it's amazing to talk about this stuff because a lot of us were talking about this way back then when they were passing Patriot Act 1.0 and saying this was going to be used against Muslims over the Muslims. That, hijacked planes with box cutters and crashed them into everything. And so, it's just, I don't know. You just kind of watch this stuff over and over again. Here's where we're at. Here's a reality roadmap for you where we're at. The election, I keep coming back to this notion, you know, if anybody tries to sell you and we got to vote on this next upcoming congressional election because most important election, we got to stop those demon rats. I see this stuff forming up, by the way, the usual game. They're right back to the same old playbook. You're going to have, you know, now the Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the White House. And you're going to have a few Republicans that are going to, they drew the straw to come out. They're going to play the role as hardcore. We're standing up and we're holding the line against these demon rats. While the rest of the Republicans will work tirelessly to compromise, which means, you know, of course, give the Democrats everything they want. And then come election time, those, you know, hardcore Republicans will stand out and say, so we tried. We tried. We just need you to vote for a few more hardcore guys like us, and then we'll be able to hold it. It's the same game. I mean, quit trying to kick the football, Charlie Brown. They're setting themselves up. Now, these guys are the hardcore Republicans. They're with you. They're trying to stop the demon rats. All the end result is the same. And though those guys don't believe that shit, they're just playing their role. It could have been two other guys. They just like drew straws. And you two guys, it's your turn to play the role as hardline conservative, standing up against the liberal demon rats to stop the. It's all a play. Because at the end of the day, the left gets what they want. The oligarchy gets what they want. It's the theater sucks. It's just like how you look out and the media is trying to hype the latest Batman movie. And there's been like 6 million of them. Why? We know how the plot basically goes. The only thing remotely interesting is how edgy the Joker is this time. How out there the Joker is. How many Joker memes could come out of this new movie? That's the only thing interesting because the plot sure as hell isn't. You know, okay, yeah, so it's Batman. We pretty much know the way this is going to go. So anybody with a brain cell is going to check out of the voting system. And with the corona lockdowns, the deadliest virus ever known to man that just some reason hasn't bumped the overall death numbers at all. They're exactly the same as they've always been. Yet we've had all of these thousands and hundreds of thousands of doom flu deaths in the U.S. and across the world. Yes, because of the horrible black death of doom flu, it's just so happened they've worked out, it's just by pure coincidence worked out where they've strip mined the economy or in the process of finishing up strip mining the economy to where the last little bit is going into the pockets of corporations and billionaires. The oligarchy, of course, just pure coincidence. They're really just trying to keep you safe. That's all. It just worked out that way. And when it goes south, and they openly say this, you know, it's going, this the economy, it's which is struggling as a result of the virus. No, it's not struggling as a result of the virus. It's struggling as a result of the fact that you shut everybody down except for the corporate outfits, and you're strip mining the economy to send that to the corporate outfits. That is why the economy is struggling, and it's an open thing, and they're trying to blame it on the flu. That's apparently going to work, but people are going to check out of that because the fact is now the sense of relative economic prosperity is no longer there. The people check out of the system. They'll check out of the voting system. A significant portion will check out of believing in this economy, this economic fairy tale that this America, you can pull yourself up by the bootstraps, build your own platform, build your own bank, build your own credit card processor, and get government protection, because that's what we do in America. We're rugged individualists who rely on the government to make corporations even more powerful, because nothing says rugged individualism like corporate oligarchy. People check out. Don't believe in the system anymore. More long-term effects, more unintended consequences. Maybe I'm lucky in this. My personal economy's been collapsed for a while now, so I'm kind of like just rolling with this shit. But a lot of people, it's like brand new. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. What do I do? Yeah, well, you just have to figure it out one way or the other. But you have to let go of the fantasy that somehow things are going to remarkably get better. Once they get the vaccine in everybody, things are going to go back to normal. Yes, that's totally going to happen. The vaccine. Boy, there's something creepy, isn't it? It's just creepy. I was telling somebody the other day, it's like, look, I'm not going to pretend I know exactly what's in this thing or what it's going to do. I mean, we know some of the ugly side effects, including death, but, you know, at least you didn't get the flu. You don't want to die of the flu. I wonder if you die of as a reaction from the vaccine, if they could still chalk that up too as a COVID death, because it was related to COVID. If you think about it, you know, you got the vaccine to protect you against the flu. You died as a result of taking the vaccine. And so really it is a result. We can blame the flu for that as well. But it is. I mean, I don't know. I know it's essentially affects a part of your DNA is how this thing's supposed to work. And I don't know. I don't know exactly. What I do know is this, is the government didn't wake up one day and decide they're really, really worried about the health and well-being of the people. I don't know how naive you have to believe to believe that the government, I mean, really, they sit there and say, oh, we have these ridiculous conspiracy anti-vax people who are out there spreading misinformation. They're just misinformed, and they're just, like I said, they're horrible, bad people who have conspiracy theories. When the biggest, most ridiculous conspiracy theory imaginable is that this government, these oligarchs, are suddenly woke up one day and they're really worried about the health and well-being of the people. People who've been open for years, you know, talking about how we need to reduce the world's population, are suddenly really worried that people are dying from the flu. And they're just bound and determined to get you to take this experimental vaccine. It's the greatest conspiracy of all. It's the most ridiculous one. It's more ridiculous than flat Earth. There we go. The notion that the government and the oligarchs are somehow suddenly really worried about your health and want you to take this vaccine, even sometimes at no charge. They're not even going to make a profit off of it because they're really worried about keeping you healthy from catching the doom flu that has, by the way, an over 99% survival rate. How does that make any sense? That it doesn't. There's something else. Maybe this vaccine doesn't do much. Maybe it is relatively harmless. Could be. But what about the next one? You don't think they're just going to stop here? You know, people think, oh, this is it. They're going to stop. It's just like how, you know, well, yeah, we let them have this. But now the Democrats, the liberals, will have to stop there. They don't dare push it any further. And yet they do. And they continue to get what they want. They'll stop with this vaccine. No, there won't be a call for it. There won't be another crisis. We're going to go back to normal. We're going to go back to normal. We just have to wait, take the vaccine, wear our masks. Saw some people walking around with Joe Biden as he was parading along an empty street behind huge fences to keep the people away. And I saw people wearing double masks. They had like a mask underneath a mask. They're double safe from the deadliest from the deadliest virus ever. Well, I'm looking at the clock. Look, we got to wrap up the regular part of the show and get into our Christian-specific segment here. But as we wrap up, again, the Q thing, the people just trying to find some kind of hope somewhere, to find something to believe in. I don't mock that, but there is a time to go ahead and accept reality, to figure out how to move forward. Don't... I think the problem with, you know, people say, well, Q at least it helped keep people's morale up. But there's a problem if that's based on a lie. If that's based on a lie, then at some point the truth comes out and then it has like you pay for that. Yeah, you kept the people's morale up for the last year or so, 2 years, whatever the case may be, 6 months. You kept the people's morale up as, you know, they did an open fraud of the election, that this was really the time the storm was coming and all of that. But now you pay the price because it just, you have this huge demoralizing of the people because it was all a lie. It was just a LARP, and then the people were lied to and they were demoralized. And what's important is if that's you, you know, don't feel bad about it. Don't feel like you're stupid because you bought into it. Whatever. Just accept the reality, pull yourself up, and it's time to move forward. Okay, well, now what? Turns out Trump wasn't anything more than a CivNat, you know, a boomer CivNat, as he never really, you know, as many of us said he always was. He didn't come riding in to, you know, drain the swamp and put the people you don't like, you know, in Gitmo or whatever the hell the storm was going to do. But what do you do forward? Are you going to just fall back in line in 2 years when it's congressional election time and talk about this is the most important election in ever because judicial appointees and stop the demon rats? We just got to have more Republicans. You're going to listen to somebody that's going to come around and sell you the snake oil of we're going to start a third party in this country because that's somehow going to work under a system that it's obvious they're just going to do open election fraud and make it come out the way they want? Or are you going to pour your energies into that? You got to figure out what you're doing moving forward. perhaps funneling energy into personal bonds in your real life of people around you. You know, figuring out supporting one another in your own community as this shit show continues to fall apart. That could come in really handy. I was thinking a while back, as things degrade, those people that they like to sit on TV and they like to mock those who work, those who grow food, those who work with their hands and fix things and can do things without calling somebody to do it for them. They love to look down because they figure they're stupid. If they were stupid, they would be getting paid millions of dollars to sit on TV or talk on a big radio station or whatever the case may be. As things go down the hill, those people are liable to find out real quick that it's they who depend on us. Maybe that's one of the reasons they have such a contempt for the working man, because deep down inside, they know they need the working man, not the other way around. The working man can survive just fine without some snarky asshole on TV reminding everybody how smart he is. But snarky asshole on TV still got to get his food from somewhere. When his car breaks down or his shower doesn't work or his plumbing stopped up, he's got to call the working man to come do it for him because he doesn't know how. The current system, as it stands, can support these people at the expense of the working man. But as it all comes apart, then as it fissures, as it separates, and then when he calls the working man to come do something, to come bring him some food or produce some food for him, he needs the working man to come fix his car, he needs the working man to come fix his plumbing, and the working man doesn't come. And then it hits home how utterly worthless they are. You see, the working man is too busy helping the other working people that he knows in his community. See, he's not going to fix your plumbing because he's fixing the plumbing of his neighbor, who in exchange is fixing his car and supporting one another. They're bartering food. They're bartering whatever they can to keep it off the books. See, they're not doing it for your government dollar so that you can tax it. They're working off the books. They're figuring out ways to survive in their own communities. They're going to talk down to you. They're going to mock you. And they're going to ridicule you. They're doing it already. They're jigging around, dancing a dance. They're so smart. But never forget, at the end of the day, they need you. You do not need them. We'll wrap up the regular portion of the show, getting into the Christian specific segment. You know what that means. If you're not into that and you're like, I'm not listening to any of that, then get the hell out. If you want to stick around and listen to it, you're more than welcome. Come in. You can sit in the very back. Nobody's going to point at you. You know, we pass the offering plate around at the beginning of the show, so you know, you won't have to feel awkward and tap the bottom of that in the middle of the Christian specific segment. So you see, there's no reason for you not to, but that choice is yours. If you do, you know what it is. Get in here, fill those pieces. Time for the Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. It's what you've all been waiting for. So yeah, get on in here, check your coffee cups. That's what I'm going to do. And let's settle in for this week's Christian specific message. So hopefully you did. I just went, by the way, it's one of the great things about not being live. I can just stop and go get a fresh cup of coffee. So hopefully you were cozied up as well. Got your fresh cup of coffee, whatever it is, your bathroom break. Whatever, as we settle in here. As always, you know, we sit down here and we try to come up with, you know, we try to look at things together from a specific Christian perspective, a specific perspective, a message, something we can think about and consider and ponder, perhaps pray about and consider from our, you know, Christian believer perspective. And what I always try to go for with this is, you know, how does this affect you in real life? You know, I mean, what does it mean for you right now in your life? And it's fine to learn about, you know, the historical aspects, and that's important too. I'm not brushing that off. And there are people that do that far better than I do. What I try to do, what we try to do here with this, is to look at things in the context of the world around us today. And, you know, what does it mean for you right now? Like I say, it's great to know about other things, and those things can be relevant to you today, because a lot of this stuff is cyclical. It's you know, as it says in the word, you know, nothing new under the sun. I mean, these things kind of rhyme, the same stuff over and over again. But we try to think about you know, okay, I come at this with, hopefully we can find something that's an inspiration for you, you know, that you can come away from and be like, I can understand how this applies to me right now as a believer in this jacked up clown world that I live in today. So let's start off. We got several different little scriptures we're going to go through, little verses we're going to read. It isn't going to take long. Don't worry. I'll make you sit here while I go through read the entire book of Numbers. That was, you know, I'm not going to do that to you. So we're going to go to Proverbs chapter 13. We're just going to do verse 20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. This is interesting because it doesn't have, it says it doesn't really matter who the person is themselves. You see what I'm saying? He, who's he? Well, it's just anybody. It doesn't tell us if he himself, is the he referenced here, is wise, foolish, in the middle of the road. I'm going to assume here we just take it the average person going along, not utterly foolish, not overly wise. We'll just apply it as our general middle of the road person walking through this life. So he, this is a generic he, that walketh with wise men shall be wise. You surround yourself, if you try to walk amongst those who are wise, and we're going to assume this he is just an average person. But if you surround yourself or listen to people that are, you know, have some sort of wisdom, that's going to rub off on you. You're going to learn. So one of the things it drives me crazy about human nature is people don't ever want to admit that they're wrong. I was talking earlier, you know, like if the storm actually comes down next week, this week, whatever. You know, and people would be like, oh, you eat your words now. It wouldn't bother me. I mean, I've been wrong before. You know, I'd be like, okay, great, I guess. But it's human nature to never want to be wrong. And this is what makes it frustrating when you try to correct somebody. How about you? How about you at your job? For instance, you start a new job, and I've probably used this illustration before. Sometimes I get confused because I talk to people IRL, I talk to people in email, I do these shows, and I come up with these, and it's like, I remember saying this, but I don't remember if I did it on the show or if it was in this conversation I was having with somebody or whatever. So again, if I repeat myself, bear with me. it's not on purpose. But now imagine if you started a new job and you've been at that job like 2 months, you know, and somebody that's been there 20 years comes up to you and says, well, you're doing that all wrong. Your natural reaction to that is to get upset, isn't it? Because you don't want to be proven wrong. You'll be sitting there hoping, I hope that guy doesn't come over here. Because why? Well, because it makes you uncomfortable. Why does it make you uncomfortable? It makes you uncomfortable because he might see that you're doing something wrong and tell you you're doing it wrong. You don't want to be told that you're doing something wrong, do you? That's human nature. Don't feel bad. I'm not picking on you. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm saying that's human nature. Everybody does it. I've done it. Everybody will catch yourself. You're doing something, you're not really familiar with it, and you haven't been doing it, maybe even just been doing it a year, but you're working alongside somebody who's been doing it their whole life or for 20 years, whatever the case may be. And when they come around, you're kind of like, you're nervous because they're watching what you do. And why are you nervous? Why do you care? Well, because he might say I'm doing something wrong. Well, that's the wrong approach. You see, you want to do the best job that you can. And if you're going to do the best job that you can, you're not going to be able to do that if somebody that knows better doesn't tell you, hey, you're doing that wrong. Because once they tell you, then you can correct and start doing it the correct way that they already know from experience. You see, they hold more experience. So you listen to them and they say, hey, no, you're not doing it right. Don't get offended. They're not being an asshole to you. If they're being an asshole to you, they would just ignore you and let you be like, I'll let this guy keep screwing it up and they'll fire him. And I can sit here and proclaim myself how much smarter I am, how worthless that guy was. He kept screwing it up. Well, of course, he kept screwing it up. He didn't know. Nobody told him any better. But if that person takes the time to say, hey, look, I know you're trying, but you're doing that wrong. This is the way it's supposed to be done. Don't get rustled by that. You want to do the best you can. And the only way you can do that if you don't have experience is if somebody that does have experience explains that to you. And then guess what? If enough people explain it to you and keep taking corrective action and not doing it the wrong way and doing it the right way, because you don't know, it isn't because you're stupid. You just don't know. You don't have experience. You've never done this job before. But the people with experience come in and they tell you, hey, no, you're doing that wrong. You got to do it this way. Oh, okay. And if that happens enough time in 10 years, guess what? You're the top hand. You're one of the top hands. You're the guy looking at the new guy going, hey, you're not doing that right. Or at least you're the one facing the decision. Do I correct this guy or do I posture and preen about how smart I am now? You see, that's why walking with the wise, you walk with the wise man, you should be wise. Well, why? Because if you have some common sense, you will listen to them when they correct you and say, no, no, don't do it that way. Do it this way. This is the correct way. Then you get experience. Then all of a sudden you become wise, because after a while, after enough corrections, then you're walking in the path of the wise right along with them. Now you're at the top hand. Now you're the guy that everybody goes to with the answers, because those guys now retired. Now you're the guy that's been there 10, 15, 20 years, and you're the one that has all of the answers, but you weren't at the beginning. At the beginning, you had no clue. You had to rely on those who came before that had more experience, that had more wisdom on your job. It's that way with life. You see, none of us have all the answers. I mean, I'm glad you listen to the show and I try to share what I know or my outlook or at least a point of view that gets you thinking about things in a manner that you haven't necessarily thought before. But I do not by any stretch of the imagination have all of the answers, not by a long shot. I just share what I can. Nobody has all the information in this life. If they tell you they do, then you probably want to run away, because they're probably very likely in the second category. You see, just as being in the company of wise people who can give you corrections, what happens? But the companion of fools shall be destroyed. You see, the fool is different from somebody who's ignorant. And I hate it when people mix those up. It's like stupid, you know? Oh, you're stupid. Oh, you're a fool. No, no, no. The person that just started the job, he's not a fool. He's just ignorant. There's no shame in that. He doesn't know. Somebody's got to tell him. If you refuse to tell him, that makes you the asshole, not him. He doesn't know. He's waiting for somebody to tell him, hey, how do I do this job properly? But you see, when you're in the company of fools, the fool doesn't give you any correction. See, the fool plunders off into his foolishness, into his destruction, and he wants you to come along with him. And if you hesitate, then you're something's wrong with you. It's like the old saying, bad company corrupts good character. The fool always wants somebody to accompany him on the path of his destruction. Have you ever known anybody that was a sure enough certified raging alcoholic? I have. Probably all of you have too. If you've been around long enough, you've known people like that. And maybe, you know, it wasn't that they were a bad person per se. I mean, they might have been a lot of fun to be around. But one thing you will notice if you're around somebody that's a raging alcoholic, and maybe you're a social drinker, you know, I mean, maybe you drink on occasion and, you know, I mean, you do or you don't. You know, you might have a drink here or there. You might sit around and have several drinks, you know, listen to me. That's what I do from time to time. I may not take a drink for a year, you know, and then I may sit down one evening and have two, three, four in my living room, you know, and listen to music that I'd forgotten about or something like that. But the raging alcoholic, it will always, if you're probably laughing if you've been around people like this, because you're going to sit here and nod your head and say, you know how it is. The raging alcoholic will always try to invent some occasion where everybody needs to drink. You ever notice that? If you've been around one, you know what I'm talking about. Like everybody gets together and says, good, let's have some drinks. It's like, well, we weren't really planning to do that. We were just going to go to the beach, you know, and you know, have a good time at the beach. You know, nobody planning to get shit-faced here. Oh, we're going to have a barbecue this weekend. Come on over. And pretty soon you figure out that a barbecue means that maybe at 10 o'clock in the night, you might have some burnt food on the grill. What he really means is come over here. I'm going to get shit-faced and I want you to join with me. They will wear your ass out. They will always invent some reason. Everybody's got to come over and drink too. See, it's not just me. I've got all of these people over here too. Yes, but you're the one that shit-faced. Everybody else had one or two beers and is now looking for the exit because they really want to go home. The fool always wants to have a lot of companions with him. The wise man is fine with walking down the road by itself. I mean, he likes to have companionship, same as anybody else. But if walking down the road of wisdom means it's a lonely road, then so be it. But the fool cannot suffer that. The fool demands to have everybody around him. The fool wants to have as much companion because that is reassurance to him. For the fool, if he's got a large crowd around him, he's not a fool. See, if he's a fool, then all of these other people are fools too. And perhaps they are. The fool drag everybody down with him. The fool drags everybody along with him. can't just plunder off into his foolishness on his own. He wants you to go down foolishness and destruction too, because then see, well, he's not alone. He doesn't want to stick out as the one dumbass. He's got a bunch of dumbasses with him, so that means he's not really a dumbass or something. Let's skip forward here. We're going to stay in the book of Proverbs all day today, by the way. Let's go to Proverbs 22:3. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. I will add my own personal opinion here. The simple pass on and are punished, and they're going to call the prudent who hide themselves a bunch of names because they won't just keep plundering forward to their own destruction. You see, the prudent man foreseeth, there's evil up ahead. Imagine like you're walking down the road back in the day when people had to walk everywhere, you know, like in biblical times, you're walking from one town to another and you're walking along and you're like, okay, we're trucking down the road. We're making good time here. And then you run into some other people and they're all beat up and bruised and crippled along. You're like, man, dude, what happened to you? They're like, man, there's a band of robbers up ahead and they're attacking everybody on this road. And you're like, oh, that's horrible. They're attacking everybody. They're robbing them. You're lucky to get away with your life. Well, the prudent man would say, well, I'm not going to keep going down the road. But see, the simple would be like, piss on them. We got as much right to this road as anybody. And they go marching forward. The prudent man is like, man, I'm going to go ahead and take this little bypass. I'm going to bypass over here. I heard there's a guy over here like selling defense weapons. You know, I got to go get some weapons. I'm going to go take this little bypass. It's a little longer way, but we're going to go around this way, you know, because we know now that we've passed several people now have told the same thing. So we know bandits are camped in the road up here. There's an ambush up ahead. So we're going to take this other action. We're going to go hide ourselves in the weeds. We're going to take this cut through the forest here that comes out on this other road that gets to the same place. We're going to wind up at the same place, but we've got to be prudent. We're going to have to cut through the forest. We're going to cut through here. We can get on this other road. It's a little longer way around, but see, the simple doesn't do that. Simple says, you're just a coward. Forget you. We're going forward. And then he gets cut down by the bandits. it's that plain and simple. He gets cut down by the bandits while calling you names because you were like, yeah, no, I'm not going to go plunge off into that shit. It's time to change course, time to change our approach. We're still tempting to get to the same place. We didn't turn around and go back. We're still on our travel here. We're going to cut through the forest here. We can take on a little camouflage. We're going to go around here and get to where we're trying to go. Simple's like, no, we were traveling down this road. We're going to keep going forward and plunge forward into our destructions. Oh my gosh, there's a bunch of bandits here. Well, no shit. You were told. You seen people all beat up from the bandits. But you went, just keep going forward. It's the only thing I know how to do because you're simple. You don't know how to do anything different. The prudent man looks ahead and says, whoo, better not wander off into that. Better take some other action to get to where I want to go versus just walking off into a known disaster. Maybe you want to take a little different path here and chill, head for where we want to go. And finally, let's do Proverbs 3, 25 and 26. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. For the Lord shall be thy confidence and shall keep thy foot from being taken. Now, I find this last little proverb here, I find it a word of encouragement. Be not afraid of sudden fear. Well, what brings about sudden fear? Sudden change. When you see things suddenly, you're in a tumultuous time right now. One way or the other, you're in a tumultuous time. And that means you're going to have times that, you know, suddenly things are different and suddenly you see all this change and it's sudden fear. But it says here, do not be afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it comes. See, it's going to be a scary thing when you see the wicked get their comeuppance. I mean, you might be glad, but at the same time, it could be frightening. If you look around and just to apply it to the world we look at today, if this, you know, this government, this whole system is utterly corrupt through and through, top to bottom, is just ate up with corruption. If corruption was black and non-corruption and justice was white, there isn't a speck of white left in the system. It's just completely black. And you know, I just picture like a miasma, you know, like a black cloud hovering around the system. But yet, if it was suddenly, you know, destroyed, if you woke up tomorrow and the whole system collapsed on itself, you know, on the one hand, you would think, well, good, the wicked are finally getting their comeuppance. But at the same time, it would be upsetting. It would be fearful. You'd be like this, oh, my gosh, you know, now what? It's now what? Who's going to lead? You know, but yes, we were led by horrible, wicked and corrupt people. But at least somebody was in charge. Now nobody's in charge. And that's fearful. When God brings about the desolation, desolation means the complete destruction, the wiping out of, just utterly ruined. Not just a bump in the road, the utter desolation of the wicked. When God drops the hammer, it's a big hammer, and he cannot be mocked. It'd be a scary thing. It'd be a scary thing to see this, because now what? Now what? Now what? What do we do? It's a sudden. The unknown is one of the most fearful things for people. Even if the known is horrible, even if the known is just utter crap, when people are given the option of the unknown, you say, okay, you can leave your life is utter crap, your circumstances is utter crap, and you can go over here. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but you go over here and I will tell you it's different. And most people will opt, I would say that most people will opt to stay in the utter crap situation because at least they know what it is. It's familiar. It's shit, but it's familiar. Be like, well, why would you stay in that? Your situation is utter crap. I told you, you can go over here and it'll be different. Yes, but how different? It might be worse. I don't know. What's it going to be? I mean, yeah, things in my life, things where I'm living, things how I'm living, my circumstances are utter crap. But at least I know what to expect. Don't laugh. I say don't laugh, and I'm laughing because that's just human nature. People will do that. People will sit there and rather stay in knee deep in shit because at least they know what it is than to say, go over here to the unknown. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. For the Lord shall be thy confidence and shall keep thy foot from being taken. The Lord is your confidence. As you get into territory that's unknown, you should have your confidence. This is where your faith comes in, your confidence in the Lord. He will keep your foot from being taken. They're laying traps for you. They're laying snares for you. And if you follow in the path of the wise and don't go plundering off into idiocy with fools, and you keep on the path of the wise and you keep your confidence in the Lord and you keep seeking the Lord, and guess what? He's going to keep your foot from their traps, from their snares, from their little schemes that they plot and the destruction that they want to lead everybody in. To because they think they're so clever. You just keep that. The Lord will keep you. You'll have confidence in the Lord. And as you continue to walk with wise people, you continue to seek the Lord. And as he continues to keep your foot from being taken and continues to guide your path, that will gain even more confidence. That increases your faith. And it builds one upon the other. Do you see what I'm saying? God gives you the instruction manual here. I mean, the choice is yours. God isn't going to force you to do anything. If you choose to strap yourself onto a pack of idiots that are going to go off and get themselves destroyed, God ain't going to stop. And when that happens, don't sit around and say, where was God? I thought he wasn't going to let me. I thought he was going to keep my foot from being taken. Well, no, the choice is yours. You chose to strap yourself onto a bunch of fools and went to destruction like he warned you would happen, by the way. You just didn't bother listening. These guys were more fun to be around. But if you walk in the path of the wise, you do the things, you know, God has outlined for you to do, and you try to seek him and you try your best, you know, he will keep you. He will be your confidence. You can put your faith in him. We're told in the New Testament, and I'm not quoting it here because we got to wrap up, as usual, went long here. But we're told in the New Testament, you know, that your faith is, you show your faith by your deeds. Your faith and deeds, your faith and action work together. Your actions are demonstrative of your faith versus just a bunch of empty words. And so be it. When you walk and do your best to walk in the way of wisdom and take those actions, then as a result of that, you know, God will keep you and God will try to help you out and guide your path. See, it has to all work together. You can't purposely strap yourself to a path of foolishness and expect God to just somehow turn that into a path of wisdom. That's your choices. You have to try to make wise choices and listen to wise people. That's how you're going to get more wisdom. You know, nobody gets smart. Nobody gets wise. Nobody achieves wisdom by being right. You know somebody that's really wise, and you say, man, that guy's got a lot of wisdom. Well, he didn't always have that. He didn't get that wisdom from being right. You see, he got that wisdom from being wrong. That's how you gain wisdom, is from your mistakes. Of course, it's necessary that somebody that knows better has to correct you and tell you, and you have to be willing to listen. And that's how you eventually achieve wisdom. But you don't achieve it if you're just right all the time. And that's, again, something that separates somebody seeking wisdom on a path of wisdom to the fool. You see, the fool's never wrong. The fool can never be wrong. Anytime you show the fool, you go, hey, you know, you're doing that incorrectly. This is the way to do it. The fool will sit there and argue with you, even though he has no clue what the hell he's even talking about. You see, wisdom is achieved by being wrong. But more importantly, by being willing to admit that and listen to somebody who knows better. And then you take that and incorporate that into yours. It's not a cheat. It's not that this is how everybody gets to being wiser, to being smarter. They listen to people that know more. And then they incorporate that into their worldview and build on that. People that claim to be right all the time, you can be guaranteed they're a fool. Because nobody is right all the time. Anybody that will openly tell you, oh, yeah, sometimes I'm wrong about shit. You know, I mean, that's probably somebody that's seeking wisdom. Might want to listen to what they have to say. Anybody that says, I've never been wrong in my life, stay way away from them because they're an idiot. You gain wisdom from being wrong. You learn from your mistakes. It sounds so cliche, but it's true. You don't learn from being right. What did you learn? Even if you are literally right about something, that's all well and good, but you didn't grow from it. You didn't learn anything from it because you already knew that. You know, it's great. You love it. Like, you're going back to our illustration of being at a job and you've been there 20 years and you know everything, and it's all great and everything, but it's stagnating. Why is it stagnant? Because everybody comes to you because you have the answers. And you cease to grow. You don't know anything. You don't learn anything new anymore. You know, everybody comes to you and asks, you got the answer. Yes, this is what you need to do at this job. Okay. Hey, what do I do about this? Well, you do this. You know, it's all fine and dandy, but that wears off after a while and it becomes so stagnating. Because why? Well, because you're not learning anything new. You're not growing. You know, at this particular job, you pretty much know everything you need to know. And there you are. You don't learn anymore. You're not growing. Why? Well, because you already know that. When you were back learning the job, that's when you were growing, because you were making mistakes. People were telling you, that's not how you do it. Oh, this is where this is at. This is what this is called. This is how you put this together. Whatever the case may be with your job, this is how you do this. And you were growing and you were making mistakes and people were correcting you and you were experiencing growth and you were gaining wisdom from that. But nobody gains wisdom from being right. You gain wisdom and you achieve growth from recognizing and listening to people who know better than you and correcting and incorporating that into your worldview. And as you keep doing that, the Lord will keep you. The Lord will guide you and he will keep your foot from being, you know, snared up from their traps. And as the two, all of it comes together, you can truly see that it all is for the glory of God. You see, God does have all of the answers. So if you live in a manner to where you're trying to correct and listen and learn and gain more and more, this is why wisdom brings you closer to the Lord. We're getting really long. I got to find a place to wrap up here. But as you gain and achieve wisdom, you see, you're building towards being closer to the Lord, because the Lord is the ultimate. The Lord has all of the answers. Jesus Christ has all of the answers. So as you try to build on wisdom and learn more and grow, you're naturally, just by those actions, growing closer to the Lord, to the knowledge of the Lord. He's the ultimate. He you know, but you're at least headed in that direction. If you're over here never admitting you're wrong about anything and plundering off into the ways of fools, you're going in the opposite direction of learning about God. the building up of wisdom, then you see results, and then the Lord guides you. Then you understand, you can see how the Lord has worked in something, because then you'll have circumstances that happen that you had no control over, and you'll be like, wow, that all just worked together. All just somehow by magic, you know. Well, it's not by magic. God did that. I've seen it.
He's like, well, you believe this, but you haven't seen God do anything.
My ass. There have been multiple times in my life it's like, well, I don't see any way this is going to work out. All I can do is struggle and move forward and try the best I can. And then, voila, something happens right on time that I had no control over, no prediction over, no way to know that was coming. And it just fell into place just right at the right time. But you see, it takes the effort to try to work towards that. And then as you see, then when it was like, wow, you know, God blessed me with that. I had no idea, no way to know that was coming. And here it just dropped in and just at the right time. And then you can build on that, and it increases your faith, and you continue to learn, and you continue to gain wisdom, and you continue to get closer to God. I hope that all makes sense, because I've got to stop. I got to wrap it up. I could keep monologuing about this on, and you would go to sleep, or maybe not. Hopefully not. We got to wrap up on that note. We're, like I say, we're about 15 minutes or so long now, so I've got to wrap up on that note. I do thank Sir Longshanks and the network for bearing with me with my shows not being punctual at an hour. Sadly, so often the case, or maybe not so sadly. But anyway, do wrap it up. And once again, I do appreciate those of you. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Really makes a difference. I really do appreciate it. Helps my morale as well. like I say, if you want to do that, that information's at the bottom of the page. We're going to wrap up. We'll be, don't forget, I'm on it pretty much every Friday with Sir Longshanks for the week wrap up of the Daily Nationalist. Always a fun discussion. And of course, we'll be back here on Tuesday for the next installment of the Parish of the Patriots.